East of the Pacific, making histories of Asian American art. On view now through August 16th at the Columbus Museum of Art. Featuring more than 60 works of artists of Asian descent, the exhibition explores how migration across the Pacific has shaped American art and culture. Experience the stories, perspectives, and artistic contributions that continue to influence our world. Don't miss East of the Pacific, making histories of Asian American art, now through August 16th. Plan your visit today at columbusmuseum.org.
All right, guys, so today's we're going to cover chapters 24 through 26. So without further ado, welcome to Goodish Girls. I'm Dallas.
And I'm Cass.
Welcome back.
Hi.
This face is not Alyssa's face.
No, it's Cass's not. Face.
Back. Bop, bop.
Hello,
making
hello.
An appearance. Welcome.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll be back a little bit more here and there.
Yes.
For everybody who doesn't know, I'm pregnant. I'm almost 20 weeks with a boy, so pregnancy's been rough. I've been taking lots of breaks and lost all motivation for things, so living that life.
You know, you can lose motivation to things because you're literally building a human, yeah. So you are forgiven.
So, yeah. But yeah, I'm glad to be back.
She's back. And it was hard to keep that secret when I was like, Cass isn't here right now. She's busy.
Yeah.
She's busy. She's not
She's
around.
She's busy. Sleeping and
she's building arms and legs. Yeah. You probably built a kidney or two this week.
I think this week I'm also building hair, which is why the heartburn has been horrible.
Yeah, the heartburn. That's what they say.
Yeah, I guess.
Yay. I love it. Congratulations.
Thanks.
I'm so excited.
Thanks.
But she's feeling good today, so we're going to record today and talk about some things. We got some catching up to do.
Yeah.
She's been with our episodes, though. She's been writing the episodes, doing the thing. So I feel like you're pretty up to date on.
I am.
On, like, what's been going on.
It's like the chapters that I'm back for today are some of my favorites. So it's like
they got
really
some good stuff packed in there.
Yeah. So
I agree. Before we do get started, though, I do want to talk about the new covers that were released this, like the preview of the covers that were released this week. Did you see them?
I did see them.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I'm literally, I am so obsessed with them.
You like the darker, like all put together covers though.
I feel
like we differ on that. Yeah. I like the like bright in your face, random covers that don't always match.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
So
yeah, I like the ones that like match, but, and also there are some, I think there's some Easter eggs in here. I know you saw the TikTok that I posted, but like, if you are looking at the covers themselves, obviously you're looking at the Quicksilver one, right? That comes out on August 19th of this year. It's very cute. It has like a little snowflake. It has some character art in there, which I think is really, really pretty and really well done. And it also, if you look at the post that Callie Hart made, it says in there that there's going to be, it says all editions of Quicksilver will feature an exclusive bonus chapter from Callie Hart. Now, my question is this a bonus chapter that we've already read online on her website?
Right.
Or Cass, are we getting a new bonus chapter that we've never read before?
I don't know. I don't know why she would.
I don't care either way.
I don't know why she would put just one of the few bonus chapters she's written.
That's what I'm saying. I wonder if it's a new one.
Yeah, I feel like it might be.
That's what I'm hoping for. Like new art, new cover, new bonus chapter, all the things, right?
Yeah.
And then if you look at Brimstone, that comes out on November 18th, which is a good luck sign because that's my son's birthday. So I'm just saying. It's not relevant to anyone else in the world but me, but
You.
I'm going to take it as a good luck charm. Yes.
Maybe there's a character
if you look
named
at that
Ace,
one,
you know?
Oh my gosh, how cute would that be? I would love that. If you're looking at the Brimstone version of it, there's a couple of Easter eggs in there, right? So we have Carrie and Swift in there leaning against a tree, and we have Onyx there. So those two pictures, there's no pictures of Saris right now. There's no pictures of Kingfisher. I think this is going to be very Carrion forward and very Onyx forward, because we do know that in this journey, in this second book, Carrion and Kingfisher go back through the silver to go get Hayden and right. whatever else adventures they're going to go on. So I really think we're going to get some, I hope we're going to get some Carrion POVs. I know for sure we're going to get some Kingfisher POVs, because she dropped a little spoiler in her stories the other day of a preview of chapter one of Brimstone, or a chapter of Brimstone. And it said Kingfisher POV in the front.
Okay.
So, and Onyx is literally on the cover of this book.
What if there's like, an Onyx POV?
There should be, because that fox is more than just a fox. So
he starts.
I need talking. Onyx's thoughts here. I need to know what the fox is thinking. I'm sure it's a very sarcastic thoughts. Probably lots of eye rolls.
Probably.
Watching all the things. So I just wanted to talk about that because I'm very excited about it, and mm-hmm. I want 10 copies of each. But yeah, they're going to have it's a hidden cover case foil, character art and papers, metallic gilded edges. It's going to be beautiful.
Are you going to bedazzle one?
I'd have to buy two. If I buy two, then I can bedazzle one. But one of them needs to stay in perfect condition.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then I might, but I think they're good bedazzled material. Like they're, it's set up to be bedazzled well.
Yeah.
For sure. Ooh, I can't wait. All right, let's jump into it. So last week we ended on chapter 23. We're going to jump in straight to chapter 24, the Lupo Proelia. So Ren and Lorth are chatting with Saris about the pieces of metal being stuck in the wall, basically the rock wall that can't be pulled out, because in the last chapters, Danya was super pissed. She was running at Kingfisher. Saris yells stop. She hits her hip on a table, and then the sword shatters and goes into the wall. In this moment, though, when they're setting this scene, Saris notices that the guys are pretty beat up, right? So they're like, he's like in a bad mood. She was like, what happened to you guys? And she's like, oh, Kingfisher's in a bad mood. And then they're in like this, they were in this argument basically. So mm-hmm. they're not looking too great. So the pieces of the sword are in the wall. Mm-hmm. She offers to cut the pieces out. She's like, hey, can I cut these out and create a new sword? And Ren's like, hey, it's not that simple. He does explain that the sword is an old Fae heirloom, and it's her God-given right to her, right to Danya. It's forged for old Fae masters with precious magic, and it shows her actual presence in the Lupo Proelia. We mm-hmm. know that the Lupo Proelia is essentially the wolf pack that Fisher is a part of, and he leads essentially. And those warriors have been together for a very long time, and it's a very big deal to be a part of that pack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this part, the first time I read it, made me laugh because I hate Danya so much. And so as soon as Ren was like, actually, it's like a family heirloom that was given like just to her with like fancy magic in it. I was like, she deserved that. She truly deserved that. It makes me laugh every time. Yes, it makes me laugh so much. Anyways.
This is where we are. And I know you listened. I think you listened to the last episode. So in the last episode, we... Mm-hmm. Alyssa and I were like rating Danya. She was like, mm-hmm. I'll give her like, you know, it was above a 5 or whatever. And I was like, guess is an 11 for sure. Like, how much do you hate Danya? 11 yeah. for Cass.
Yeah.
And I gave her a 5. And I gave her a 5 for, I know, for a couple of different reasons. Here's my reasons. Okay. So this woman has been a warrior, right? Mm-hmm. She's a Fae warrior. She has been with this wolf pack for hundreds of years. She is currently the only woman in the wolf pack. She was not always the only woman in the wolf pack. If you've read the bonus POV, like the bonus chapters, you'll know that there was another woman in the pack who's no longer there. Mm-hmm. So she is the only woman there, which I think says a lot. And I know that like I personally have worked in like a male dominated work industry in my life before. And so I feel like it was maybe harder for her to prove herself. It doesn't say that in the book. I just like to resonate with her in that way. So maybe yeah. she had to hold herself to a different standard or I also, and they do see her as family, right? She sees them as mm-hmm. family. So can you imagine you have a really, really important family member who has been gone for well over 100 years, comes mm-hmm. back, shows up multiple times, says nothing to you, right? And then all of a sudden you're like in this meeting and this little human chick shows up and you're like, who are you? What is happening, right?
She
destroys her sword.
She's also a little racist, though, in that way. Oh, or what? I guess it wouldn't be race. Well, I guess it would be race, right? Like humans, fae. That's a race, right?
Ooh.
What would you call that?
Maybe
prejudice?
Ooh,
either way.
I don't know.
She shows it multiple times throughout. Against Ceres.
But she's like, she references her like a human, right? Which I get. I think that would be like referencing like a low fae, like versus like a high fae.
Well, yeah, because she's like this low fae who has all this stuff given to her, who thinks she's like the best of the best. Which I get. She did earn that spot. Mm-hmm. But also, I think some of that comes from her just being high fae and the way she treats others.
And you,
because
you,
there's
right.
other high fae and they don't treat others that way. Also, Ren and Kingfisher and
Lorth.
My pregnancy brain's gonna kick in. I was like,
you.
I can think of him. All of them are defending her, like the whole book. And she still just won't let up.
So I think this is like a big reference of how important Danya is to the Leopoprelia and to the pack. And that I think they do see her. I think they see each other as siblings. Like, I think they do see her as a sister. And I think she mm-hmm. sees Kingfisher as a brother, who is someone who is really important to her. And I feel like she does feel super abandoned and super left behind and left out and unimportant. And I think that I can understand how that is frustrating. Again, I'm not saying like what she did was the right move, but I do get her anger. And then
just
all of a sudden there's like this girl here and you're like,
yeah,
who are you? Like, you have zero importance to anything in this. She does have importance, but I can see why Daniel would not understand that in the beginning.
I just want to know why hers is so like her feelings about it are so big compared to the rest of them.
So Ren is super loyal to Kingfisher. Obviously,
right.
Danny is as well, but I think Ren is naturally a very forgiving soul.
Yeah.
Like, Renvis is just like, it's cool, I'm gonna go with it, right? Like, I think of it like me and my husband, right? Like, my husband's like, it's cool, I'm over it. Like, it's cool, let's just go with it. And I'm like level 100 all the time. Like, the world is burning down, everything's ending. Oh my mm-hmm. gosh. Right. And he's like, no, it's fine. Like, we're good. Right. And I'm like, no, it's awful. So I think that maybe that's just part of her personality as well. Like, I think she probably gives 110% to everything she does.
Yeah.
Right. And then Lorth was saved by Kingfisher.
That's true.
Right. So he's like, Kingfisher can do no wrong in Lorth's eyes.
Right.
Right. Like, he saved him. He gave him a literal piece of his soul. Kingfisher can do what he wants. Right. And it's no big deal. But I think Danya is not necessarily more realistic, but maybe more realistic, right? She's like, where have you been? Like, you came back, you didn't say anything. I just think that if I was in that situation, I would probably be almost just as mad as Danya. I'd be like, you came back, you didn't say anything, you didn't say I'm sorry, like, you didn't, where have you been, right? And then also, she doesn't know this new Kingfisher. The Kingfisher with all the Quicksilver, the Kingfisher that's been gone for over 100 years. She doesn't know that person like Ren does, right? Ren's like, this isn't him. Like, this isn't who he usually is. So now Danya is not only like seeing him for the first time with a new person that maybe or maybe not as important to her. Now she's like, she doesn't even know you anymore.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying what she did was correct, but also I just get her anger. I think she's very hurt, and I think she expressed it in the wrong way.
I feel like if she was introduced at a different point in the book, maybe I wouldn't dislike her as much. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, right, you know a lot about Kingfisher, you know a lot about Ceres, you know mm-hmm. a lot about the characters you've been reading about. So you understand a lot, even though you don't know everything yet. And then she comes in and you're like, bro, what
is your deal? You're automatically protective of them.
What is your deal? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right, because we've been along for the whole ride, right? Like, we're 24 chapters in and she's just now showing up and being like, WTF.
Yeah.
Which is fair. Like, from the reader's perspective, I think she was designed for us to be like, sit down, ma'am.
Right.
Like, you don't need to speak here. But then, like, can you imagine, like, even later on in the chapters, right? Like, when they're at dinner and Sarah sits on in the right hand side, which is like the wildest seat to sit in, right? But no one's going to tell Sarah's poor girl. Like, and then Dania sits down and she's like, are you fucking kidding me? What is happening? Can you imagine, like, this new human girl, Dania hasn't been with them at all for these chapters and this journey that's going on. And now all of a sudden, new human girl is like sitting in the queen's seat and she's like, this is the upside down. I can't handle this. I think Dania's sensory is just overloading.
That's fair.
But, like, can you imagine? And I feel like from Dania's perspective, and this is not written, this is just me guessing, like, if I was Dania, I would assume that they probably told Ceres what that seat is. And she decided to sit there anyways. That's what I would assume.
No, because it's not till after that, remember?
Correct. No, they did not tell her.
Yeah, she makes a big deal about it. And then Kingfisher comes up behind her, puts his hands on her shoulders and is like, she can sit here. This is her seat.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, if you were Dania. And then
after that.
Correct. But from Dania's POV, imagine you're sitting down. You're at a table with four people. She's sitting there. I'm going to assume that these logical Fae told her what that seat meant. They didn't, assholes. But from Dania's point of view, like, she's probably like, oh my God.
Kingfisher's you guys not told her. Tell her. He's like, this is very amusing. Keep sitting there.
Nobody told her. But do you think Dania knew that nobody told Ceres?
Probably not.
Or do you think she was like, oh my God, you know that the seat is and it's very important and you're sitting in it. Like, what? That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying Dania is excused for her actions. What I would like, though, is Dania to receive a smidge of grace for her emotions. I think some of them are somewhat valid. That's my TED Talk.
That's fair.
I had this already for Alyssa too.
Only because you're saying it will I say okay.
Okay. You don't have to like her. It's okay. Maybe she'll get a redemption arc in book two. I think she will.
It's okay
if you don't like her.
She's like a Tamlin to me. She's not as bad as Tamlin, but I'm like,
interesting.
I don't care if I see a redemption arc for her. She's just a character I don't care about.
Genuinely thought you were gonna be like, she's just like Nesta, which I know you hate Nesta.
She is, but Nesta's also there where I'm like, I don't approve of your redemption arc that they gave you through the book.
Take those quotations away. Take them back. Take them back. I will go to war.
It is true though.
I went to a party last night and I was dressed as Nesta.
I know.
That's how much I love her. I will die for her. So anyways, this sword, it's stuck in the wall. Okay.
Yes.
It's not coming out. We can't file it down. We can't just like take the pieces about it. Mm-mm. And everything's kind of a mess, right? So we know obviously Dania's super upset. She's very dramatic, and she thinks that Ceres's response are pretty ironic and kind of rude, but I think that's Ceres's coping mechanism, like being a little sarcastic, right?
Yeah.
I think she's like, oh no, what do I do, right? Like, obviously Ceres didn't mean to break the sword. She had no idea what was happening. Like, she didn't know that she had that power, right? She saw her mate, which, again, she didn't know, in danger, her words took over, her body took over, and then her magic took over. So that's fair.
Yeah.
I don't know. So anyways, they got to get the sword out. And so there is a quote that you wanted to say in here. which I know you wrote in here. And I was like, I'll make sure that we say, somebody's going to say the line. But if you would like to say the line, since you're here, you can't.
It's the way it's recorded, like with the different voices, it makes me laugh so much. So Ren goes through, obviously he fully explains that history shows alchemists can only forge quicksilver blades if it contains more than 5% of quicksilver. So he's like trying to tell Ceres why this is like so important and why she is really important and how like rare she is to fix this sword. And he also mentions that what Ceres did to the sword, there's no record of history of that happening before. So he's like, you literally have to fix it. It's literally important for you. And Ceres is kind of just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what's going on. And so Dania says, if she can't figure out how to wipe her own, and before she can finish, Ren cuts her off and says, Dania, I swear on the seven gods, if you don't shut up, I will toss you out of here myself. And it's like the first time he like turns on a dad voice and is essentially like, shut the fuck up. And then she cries. Like a little bitch, because Ren yelled at her.
Yes. I would also cry if Ren yelled at me, to be fair.
But it's funny.
Like, daddy, I'm sorry.
But it's so good. She's just like, she's going off and going off and going off. Like, as they're trying to explain this to her, and Sarah's just like, I can't do it. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know, Devin, and she help. Just
gets so mad, and then Ren is like, shut it down. Shut up. I'm done.
Yeah. Agreed that Ren should have shut it down.
Time. It makes me laugh.
It is a funny line. Ren can do no wrong. She did need to tone it down. I get it.
It's the way it's recorded, too. I think it's
just if you have not listened to the book, you should go listen to it because it's amazing. But listen, make sure you hear that specific line because it's iconic.
Yeah.
Dania.
Yeah.
If you don't shut up.
But then she keeps going anyways. So after she cries for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and again, they're her family. Like, she's known them for a really long time. She's very comfortable with them. She's a very high, strong personality. So, I'm not saying she did right, but either way. And Ren's like, girl, shut up. Like, you're fine, right?
Well, and he also ends up having to explain to her that, like,
they have a year.
Need her, right? If they don't figure it out in a year, Malcolm's going to win. Everybody's going to die. Yeah, so they literally need Ceres to figure it out.
But you know what would have probably helped that? If someone in the beginning would have been like, hey, girl, we have an alchemist. Her name is Ceres. This is her. Let's introduce you. Like,
But did she give them a chance? Doesn't she just storm him once he comes
King
in?
Fisher's been there for weeks.
No.
Ren has been back and forth to the camp a couple times as well. Right. Has he not?
Ceres has never seen her until right now.
Correct. Right? So but then like she knowing storms Dania.
Him. Yeah. She storms him though. And then Ceres, this is her first time seeing it, which is why she reacts that way. So it was because
her sword, blew up into a million pieces. Yeah. Before that, she didn't care about Ceres. But like, can you imagine if Ren was like, hey, Dania, just so you know, we have an alchemist. Her name is Ceres. Eventually, she'll show up here. She's very important. I don't know. The miscommunication trope.
That would
like,
cause
sometimes frustrate me so bad.
Well, they are all men.
Yes, they are. So. Kills me. I'm like, you should have just told her. And I know they're like, and someone's like, there wouldn't be a book. There could be a book. Daniel could have been a nice lady.
Maybe I wouldn't hate her.
Maybe you wouldn't have hated her. You never know. So the quicksilver in the blade in the wall starts talking to her, and so she's figuring out that she can actually communicate it to it, right? And so she's like trying to figure it out, trying to speak to it and like figure out basically what it wants, right? Because sometimes it can talk to her, but it hasn't really said too much. During this point, Ceres is obviously, like, super upset. She's really stressed out because she can't figure out what to do. She can't fix it. And Ren informs everybody that they have about a year or so, like, just a year to win this war because Bellicon isn't sending supplies. The soldiers are hungry. Like, they won't have enough people, weapons, or anything by the time there's another year, which is why Ceres herself is so important.
Mm-hmm.
During this time, though, we do note that Ceres hears a very faint sound of the Quicksilver coming from the sword. And then we do learn that a lot of Quicksilver was, or at least a little bit of Quicksilver was infused with other metals, which makes sense to Ceres of why Madra took a lot of the metal back home in Zalbarran, why there's really not a lot of accessibility to it, because she knew that it had Quicksilver in it,
mm-hmm.
which was interesting.
Yeah. They also mentioned that, well, if you think about it, right, she had those few times that she controlled either, like, a little knife or something back home.
Mm-hmm.
So it obviously was still circulating, but, like, how much Quicksilver in comparison to what she's working with now? Because Ren says, historically, alchemists should only be able to forge Quicksilver into blades or know that it's there if they had more than 5% of Quicksilver in it. Mm-hmm. But we know that that's not true for her. So, like, how much...
Right, because she can control, like, very, very small amounts of Quicksilver.
Right. So how much were in those few that were passing around? Was it more than 5% or was it less than 5%? And that's why maybe Madra didn't grab those.
Yeah, that's a good question, right? If... And then my other question is, like, can Madra detect that kind of stuff, or was she just guessing and assuming that it all had it in there?
Right.
Right.
If it was silver, maybe she took it, or.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that's a good thought. Part of me wants a more detailed description of, like, Madra, and maybe like a chapter of Madra or so, to get some answers on that. Like, how she got through the Quicksilver. What kind of relics does she have? How did she get the relics? So I have some questions on Madra, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like we don't learn a lot about her.
Mm-mm. No, we don't. She's there for, like, a little bit, and then she's kind of a big deal, and then she's kind of gone. Until, obviously, the end of the book, where she kind of shows up again, right?
Right.
So Daniel leaves the war room. The Daniel show is over. Kingfisher also bails, like, and Ceres is like, where's Kingfisher? Like, where did he go? Loreth informs her that Kingfisher went to go see Taelenna, the gorgeous healer with the amber eyes, right? And so this is where Ceres is, like, feeling real jealous, right? She's felt it a little bit before when she's heard Taelenna's name, but this is where she's, like, in her own head, she's like, oh my God, are they dating? Do they have history? Like, why does he keep going to see her?
It's because it's twice in 1 week.
Yeah. Which I would also be like, hello? Where are you going? And then so she's like, I need a drink, right? Like, I just need to chill out. So Loreth takes her to a little tavern.
Mm-hmm.
She has, like, 5 drinks. Girl is drunk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she says that Kingfisher is lying to her, but Loreth is like, he's not. He literally can't. He's an oath-bound fae. He cannot lie.
Right.
And so he explains that at 21, which is when we know that a fae, it reaches maturity. Right? They grow really fast, like 21 years old, like they're full grown.
Mm-hmm.
They bleed on a stone to choose truth. Or if you don't choose truth, you lose your honor, right? So you can choose to not be an oath bound fae. You can choose to be a liar, but you won't have any honor among you.
Right.
And she's like, I really don't believe that. And he's like, what do you mean? She's like, well, that's what a liar would say, is that they don't lie, which is fair. Like, I don't know. She just has to take their word for it.
Right.
You know? And so the question I think arouses, like, was it you that asked, or was it Alyssa that asked? Someone asked, like, the fae lie, like, fae can't lie trope. Like, where did it originate from?
I think that's Alyssa. Because I feel it's in all the books. So I'm just like, ah, yes, can't lie.
Okay. This, in our notes, there it says, like, where did this originate from? Well, guess what? I have an answer for you. I looked it up. I did some research. So I do think this is kind of a thing across the board, right, in a lot of fantasy books. But in this story specifically, they get to choose whether or not they're going to be a liar. They take an oath, and if they break it, then they have no honor, which means a lot to them. And also, could you imagine if people were the same way? If like when you reach 21 years old, you were like, okay, take your oath, be honest, or live your life as a liar. I think our world would look a lot different.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
It would be a lot different, yes.
I'm here for it. So again, the very little bit of research that I did, I found a website, Writing in the Margins, mm-hmm. and they do talk about how modern day fae writing really sets in the notion that fae cannot lie, like physically cannot. But in older times, even back to like the 12th century, there was a Welsh tale that proposed that they don't even take an oath because they don't need to. They just choose to lie because they know it's so bad. Like they don't need an oath. They don't need like a promise. They just are like, we don't do that. There's also a British folklorist, Catherine Briggs, who recounted that according to Elidurus, the fairies were great lovers and respecters of truth. And indeed, it is not wise to attempt to deceive them, nor will they ever tell a direct lie or break a direct promise. Though they may often distort it, the devil himself is more apt to prevaricate than to lie, which again goes back to like the modern day fae and the fae that we read about, right? Where mm-hmm. they can't lie, but they will like dance around the truth. They will make a very specific bargain with you that you may or may not understand what you're actually agreeing to.
Right.
So I think that's really, I do think it's very interesting how far the folklore for it goes back. So in case you wanted to know.
Well, now we know. Alyssa,
you're welcome.
Alyssa can know now.
The ages and she'll listen to this and be like, "Oh my gosh, look at this research."
That's where it is. Yeah, I feel like in my head, I'm just always like, "Yeah, they don't lie.
They don't lie."
That's
same,
just a
right?
fae trait in my head.
And I agree. Like, it's very rare. I think we read a book where the fae can lie, but also you have like the big one, right? You have ACOTAR, where the fae can lie, right? Fae was like, the fae cannot lie. And then they're like, no, bro, that's just what we told you guys. We can totally lie to you.
But in Lightlark, Oro and his people cannot lie, but the rest of the fae can. So it like depends what kind of fae you are.
Right.
So I feel like each one's different.
Yeah.
But I feel like
I mean, the author gets to choose, right?
Yeah. But it does show up a lot.
Yeah, it does. Whether or not the fae can or cannot be honest is a big question in each story. I do like the one where they get a choice. I think that's interesting, right? Like, you can bleed on the rock and choose to not lie, or you cannot. It's up to them. So I thought that was really interesting.
I think he mentions that, like, Malcolm, or maybe it mentions later, that Malcolm did not choose to bleed on the rock. Which makes
sense.
No,
and he chose to stay with a curse, right? So, like, he loved the power of the curse. He tries to keep the curse. It doesn't say, like, what age Malcolm was when that happened. So I don't know if that was before or after Malcolm's 21st birthday, I guess. Malcolm is not in any way bound by any truths.
No.
Right? But, I mean, he can make bargains because he did technically make that bargain with Kingfisher, right?
Yeah, but does that come from his power of the curse?
Well, no, because anyone can make the bargain, right? Because, like, Kingfisher makes a bargain with Ceres.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, he makes the bargain, like, until the coin – when the coin touches the ground. And then he just never lets the coin touch the ground.
Right.
So maybe he is. Maybe the curse came afterwards. Like, after he turned 21. Maybe he is – maybe he did take the oath and then received the power of the curse and was like, actually, I kind of like this.
Well, it just takes away their honor. Right? So, like, other people don't see them as, like, special or high up or, like, important. But he's evil anyways. So, like, he makes
that's
himself
true.
Known
no, that's
in a
true.
Different way. I don't know.
That is interesting.
I don't know. But she does mention Right, because you said Saris doesn't super believe it. She's kind of like, eh. But she does say that Kingfisher knew that they needed weapons to win, and yet he still made the oath with her, or the bargain, that she could go home after she makes all the relics for every single person. And this is where Loreth is like, what? But then at the same time, he says, don't doubt his oath.
Yeah, like if he made that for you,
Right.
then he's gonna stick to his word.
Yeah.
So my question is, why do we think he was shocked? Do we think it's because she's the only alchemist, right? And then she would be gone? Or do we think Loreth can smell like both of them on her from earlier and is like, oh, like that's weird. You guys are together, but he's gonna let you go? Or do we think it's because it was the alchemist thing only?
I think it is because she doesn't understand a lot of her power, right? Or like what she is. But then he's like, well, you can't go home till you make a relic for every single person in the army. Like, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of time. And she also has no idea what she's doing. So to me, I read it as like he was shocked that he would make a bargain like that, being like, you can't go home until you do this. And that being
But
like
does Lorth
unreasonable to him.
know? Does Lorth know that she has no idea what she's doing? Like, how much does Lorth actually know at this point in time?
Well, I mean, he was just there for that whole conversation with Danya when Ren's like, yeah, here's all this history. And she's like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's true.
I just feel like that's a big bargain for him to make.
It is a big bargain.
For her to not know at all what she was doing, and for him to know there's only a year before they all die. So, like, is she actually gonna go home? I mean, obviously we know how it ends, but like, at this point, when she knows nothing, is that too big of a expectation? I don't know.
That's some food for thought. She does also ask about the teeth again, which always makes me laugh. And
Why?
we did talk about
She's
this
like
in a couple episodes
obsessed with
before.
them.
Well, yeah, he scratched her, bit her. And so Lorth gets super uncomfortable. And so we did in the previous episodes, like kind of touch in what this was because there was some like earlier conversation about it. But this is the actual chapter where Lorth like really gets into it. And he
Yeah.
obviously needs many more drinks to talk about this because it's super, super taboo. It's like worse than taboo. It's,
Yeah.
as he says, scandalous. He's like, it's worse than taboo. It's scandalous. And so when you drink the blood, if you go too far, then you could be like become addicted, things happen. But it like basically brings you both to euphoria, which I also think is pretty cool. So my
Right.
question is, do we think that if a fae drinks too much or goes too far, that the other fae just dies? Like, do they bleed out or does something else happen? Like, they're not cursed anymore, so they can't change anybody, right? Like, they're not the princes, so they can't like turn someone into a feeder. So, like, what happens? Do they just literally drain that fae of blood and that fae passes away?
That's what I
Or.
assumed, only because I think of it like Twilight. Like, you know, like, this is gonna sound so stupid. You know how, like, Jasper is like a new vampire? And so he's still learning how to, like, control his appetite to only animals. So, like, if he had to do, or like Edward, right? When he has to bite Bella to, like, get the venom out. And then they're like, Edward, stop. Edward, stop. Like, stop drinking her blood. You're gonna kill her. Like, that's what I imagine, is that if they drink too much, they're just not gonna stop, and then they're just gonna kill him. I don't know.
My
I had
thought
flashes
also
of
was
Twilight.
possibly it's been a long time since I've watched Twilight. Like
Well,
a
they're all
really long
on
time.
Netflix again, so if you want to rewatch them, I already have.
I am pausing on TV, not for my health or anything like that. I recently discovered that Fortnite is a game.
Oh, I forgot you were playing Fortnite all the time.
It. I'm playing with my friends online. I like
Yeah.
it.
My hobby is
I don't play
TV.
Solo, though, because I die immediately. Yeah, I'm not good at first-person shooter games, but I do get these really cool outfits, and I get to drive the cars in there. And so my friends who are good at these games do all the, like, pew, 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 right? And so I run around the cars and run people over.
Right.
So when we end the game, it's like, my husband's like, I got 16 kills and 4 assists. And my cat's like, I got 24 kills or whatever. And I'm like, I got 4 assists and 1 kill. Did so good.
Meanwhile, I'm just
drove the car.
Rewatching all old TV shows or movies. And watching, I'm like turning into my mother. My mom loves to watch documentaries. Like any and all documentaries now. Like they're not just crime ones anymore. But we like went through Netflix. Yeah. Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime the other day. And she's watched like almost all of them. She just like turns them on. And it's like her background noise. But she's like, what? It's wild. But I'm getting to that. I just turn on things I haven't seen. I'm like, oh, now I've seen it.
There you go. Now you've seen it. That's funny. I don't know. I think, going back to it, I think that, because he's like, they can become like addicted. Maybe if they drink too much, then they start needing to go after others. Non-consensual. To like reach that euphoric high.
What do you mean? Oh.
So like two Faye are together, like one drinks from the other, right? And then like if they don't stop themselves, like they will get too high. You know what I mean? Like too much, and then they have to go after other Faye. Or I mean, I feel like that's the second lot. Like I like the first one, like where it's like that person's probably, or that Faye's just probably gonna die. But I do think that it's an interesting theory of what happens. I would like to see in the second book. This is probably really bad. I would like to see the situation play out.
This situation?
Maybe like some super side characters. They're like, oh, so-and-so did the taboo thing. They drink too much and they died.
Or.
Or.
Now there's just this Fae on a rampage.
There's this Fae. It drank from the other Fae. Now it's running around biting people.
I don't know.
Kingfish is like, hold on, babe, I'll be back. I gotta go tame this Fae that bit somebody.
I don't know.
Straight to jail.
Done.
Goodbye. Straight to jail. Gosh. Oh, that's funny. And then, so, yeah, Loreth does say, though, that they don't need it to survive. Like, it's fully a sex thing, right?
Right.
And so he's like, if you want to know more about this, you're going to need to ask about this like somewhere else, right? To someone who may be inquiring about this.
Right.
And then I remind that they can smell each other. Like they can smell other people on them, right? So she said that she showered, but she was already educated on like the fire burning the scent away. Did she forget? Did she stand in front of a fire earlier? Like, and I also wondered in the war tent why they couldn't sense it, right? Because they were just together, like Saracen Kingfisher, and then eventually she made it to the war tent, right? And Renfis said it, and he did tell her, he was like, go stand by the fire. Did she do that? Did she do it fast enough? Because I feel like if she didn't, or if it wasn't on her anymore, or I feel like if it was on her, Dania for sure would have thrown that in his face.
Maybe,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if they still smelled like each other and Dania smelt it in that war tent, I think she would have been like, hello, and you're sleeping with her, right?
Right.
So that makes me think like maybe she got to the fire quick enough and burnt it off. So I don't know if Loreth can smell Kingfisher on her.
Right, because she says, or she like worries in her head that he can smell it.
Right.
Like now that she's like, oh, this is kind of a weird topic. I bet he can smell that. But also I feel like this is kind of something that's not super consistent throughout the book. You know? Like
yes, I also agree.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you can, sometimes you can't.
Right. Or it's like sometimes it's forgotten about, or and then like sometimes it's mentioned at like the worst times to like keep the story going. But like, what about all the other times? Like you're saying, like with Danya and stuff, like how do we know?
What I'm saying is I wonder if she stood by a fire like in the war tent.
Right.
Right. And it just, the scent burned off of her.
Right. But
I don't know. Is there a fire in the war tent? It's a magic tent. I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't know.
There's probably rugs in there. Probably. They got lots of rugs all over these war tents. So the topic finally switches and they're like, she's asking about like Loreth's past and where he came from and what's happening. So he was a traveling singer. And he met Kingfisher on the road in a ditch and he was almost dead. He was attacked by vampires. He was shot by feeders. The rest of the Lupo Parelia and Kingfisher found him. And they were like, you just put him out of his misery. Right. But Kingfisher ignored them and carried them to Kalish himself. The healers were not optimistic and they said that they would bury him under a tree when he dies. And Kingfisher ignored them as well and made Loreth his brother, giving a piece of his soul to him. It's an ancient technique that Kingfisher's father taught him to save someone important. However, he saved a stranger instead, saving Loreth. He offered Loreth a place with the wolves, or he could leave when he was better, and Loreth decided to stay. He trained hard. He ate a lot. He got a lot bigger and a lot taller, and he was ready to kill over at the war camp. It took him 9 days to cross the Omnimarian Mountains to the war camp from Kalish. And Ceres is like, holy cow. Like, I remember hearing about this. Only, like, suicidal Fae would cross those mountains. But Loreth did it, right? So he, like, changed as a person and he joined the Lupo Proelia. And so she also asked, like, okay, well, what does that mean to have, like, a piece of your soul? And he explained that if he dies, if Loreth dies, his soul just goes back to Kingfisher and Kingfisher lives on the rest of his days, right? But if Kingfisher dies first, then Kingfisher is basically stuck in limbo because a chunk of his soul is still with Loreth. So I imagined this as like a little Danny Phantom running around.
Yeah.
Right. So if Kingfisher dies, Kingfisher's like little Danny Phantom scooting through the halls while Loreth is like doing his thing. However, he does not have to be a Danny Phantom for very long because Loreth states that if Kingfisher dies first, Loren plans to go very quickly afterwards with whatever means necessary because he does not want Kingfisher to live or not live that way. Right.
Yeah.
He did note that it's happened before. Sorsha, the queen of Alisan Fae, her mother saved her life, and 180 years later, her mother dies. Sorsha takes power, drinks elixirs and vampire blood to keep her young. She surrounds herself with males who would die to keep her. She also wants to live forever. So over 3,000 years pass, and she doesn't look a day over 30, but her mother is chained to her, forced to see the world, unable to interact or move on. So that's a very interesting story, and I think it had a lot of details to it. It doesn't tell us, like, whether or not, like, Sorsha and the mother had an agreement. Like, hey, like, I saved you. Like, live for this long and then go on. It does – and it tells us, like, Sorsha found all these things and wanted to keep it. But I wonder if there's more to that story. And I also wonder if we're going to meet Sorsha in book two. She comes up for just a quick second, and then we move on. But I wonder if – that will happen. And I wonder what the backstory to that is.
Yeah. I feel like we meet a lot of like Fae from the past or like just from history, but we don't learn about a lot of them in this book. So I feel like maybe each of them will make some kind of appearance throughout the series. Hopefully.
That's what I'm hoping to.
It's not just like,
I hope they're not all red herrings.
This one and this one and this one. And then they should never talk about it again.
Yeah. We're like, what about that Fae from three books ago?
Yeah.
No, I'm hoping that she's like setting the scene for future books and talking about other Fae, like full circle moments. And so that wraps up chapter 24. So that was a beautiful chapter. It did give us a lot of information. We jump right into chapter 25 with Ballard. Oh. So Kingfisher takes Ceres. Is this your favorite chapter?
I love this chapter.
Oh,
it's one of my favorites. One of my favorites. Audible it leads five. Into, I think, one of my, yeah. These next two, I just love them. I love this.
I love that. Yeah. Yes. Amazing. Let's get into it. All right. Chapter 25, Cass's favorite chapter, Ballard. We're here. So Kingfisher takes Ceres back to Kalish, but leaves her alone for the night. She wakes up the next day with Onyx kissing her, licking her little face. And Kingfisher does not show up at all that day. So she gets to like wander around, check out the palace there, but she doesn't feel at home. And she felt Kingfisher shouldn't be there either, as if it was a home made for families. She does go to bed that night, and the next day eventually shows up. So she does sleep all night. Kingfisher doesn't show again. And this time she's like agitated. She's pissed, right? She's so mad that the fire sprites stop visiting her. Even Onyx leaves.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to go outside and have fun by myself. You're kind of mean.
Right. So like, the fox that is more a fox is like, girl, you're wild. I'm out. And the fire sprites are like, we can't handle this. Those poor fire sprites are already stressed. They need a break.
They're checking on her. They're like, she's, I can't.
You know, that's for the best. I'm sure that she is over it, right? But like, you finally get your first like moment with this man. Things go completely awry. Mm-hmm. You blow up a sword, and then you're literally left alone for multiple days.
Yeah.
I get it. I would also be super pissed, right? So Kingfisher finally shows up. He like knocks on the door and walks in anyways. Whatever. And he sees that Ceres is wearing his shirt. He's like, that's a little bit too big for you, right? And it's a dark green shirt, which this is not the first time we've heard of said dark green shirt. So he does not always wear black. So he does mm-hmm. have either a couple pieces of green clothing, or maybe that's the same one. I don't think it's the same one. I think it would have said it's the same one. So he might have a couple dark green pieces of clothing.
Right.
But she notes that he looks pale with bruises under his eyes. He says that a pack of feeders were moving by the border, but the army flashing at the river made them run. So like he was like out fighting stuff. And he says that he's going to see Taelenna, which again. Taelenna is coming up. Ceres is very jealous. She tries to hide it. But he mentions he'll be like, I'll be back to you tonight. Like, I'm taking you somewhere, right? So he's mm-hmm. going to go see Taelenna. This poor girl. Like, can you imagine walking away and her being like, oh my God, Taelenna again? Are you freaking kidding me? So it's just so silly. So he finally comes back. He seems a little bit better, right? Mm-hmm. He offers her a canvas bag and tells her to bring Onyx if it makes her feel better. Because she's like, where are we going? He's like, just bring the fox. It's fine. So when they step out of the portal, there's music, there's twinkling lights, and a great smell of food. And they were informed that they are in Ballard. Mm-hmm. And they're in Ballard, they're celebrating the longest night of the year. And he used to visit as a kid. But he just needed to collect something. So that's why they're there. But he's like, hey, I want to eat some food. It's been 120 years. Like, there's High Fae, there's Lesser Fae, Pixies. The pixies are showering people in flowers. It all seemed like a really good moment and a good celebration. And they, like, no one really mind anybody's presence. Like, everyone's just chilling, right?
Yeah, they're all
getting eventually along. They're all getting along really well. Like, no one's like, oh, Kingfisher, mm-hmm. Kingfisher, right? Like, in the pub, they're all like, Kingfisher. They're just like, what's up, bro? Hello. Welcome. So they sit on a hill, and she realizes like everything is safe at this moment. So they spend some time. They're not worried about war or Malcolm or like rations or anything like that. And Ceres mentions that this moment is what she wants for Hayden. Right. Mm-hmm. And Kingfisher mentions that like he could still have this. Right. He with the job and the place that Carrion got him, like he could still have these moments. But Ceres kind of is a little bit honest about Hayden, and she's like, I don't have any, like, she has no faith in Hayden, right? She's worried she won't be home to help him, and mm-hmm. Kingfisher's like, you'll make it home. Like, it's going to be okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I really hope that Hayden gets a redemption arc, because I'm so sick of, like, having to hate on him so much. Yeah. So Kingfisher's like, hey, like he's going to be fine. Right. And I agree. I think he is going to be fine. I think he's tougher than he looks. I think he's also survived in Sovereign for a while. Right. And now he's doing his own thing. So this is the moment that Kingfisher decides that he's going to help her with the relics. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of go back and forth a little bit about it. But she does note that he is not snarky right now. Like he's not sarcastic. Like he seems genuine. Mm-hmm. He seems like a little bit more relaxed. And this is also where we learn kind of what we mentioned earlier, like where the Fae turn full grown adult at 21, because she asks how the aging works. So he says that the Fae kids are weak and vulnerable, but they're fully grown by 21 years. And then the aging process slows dramatically. So lots of monsters like to eat kids or younger adults. And then it says, then there's Malcolm. His hatred would wipe the world clean if he had free reign. So this is the first, like one of the first times as well that Kingfisher like brings up Malcolm and has mm-hmm. thoughts about him that he right. like portrays out loud.
Right.
Which I thought was really interesting. She changes the subject pretty quickly over to some young girls that are like watching Kingfisher and giggling, and she calls him Lord of Kalish. And Kingfisher becomes uncomfortable, and he's like, I'm not a lord. I haven't kept my people safe. And I left them for 110 years. Like, I failed them. I am Lord of Nothing. And this is where she notes that the silver in his eye pulses. So, again, mm-hmm. we're getting to a moment where she's mentioning what the Quicksilver is doing in his eyes. Because each time he feels different things or does different things, it moves differently or looks different or reacts mm-hmm. differently. So, it's pulsing at this moment. So, Sarah's is like contemplating giving him some comfort in some way, but she's also worried, right? She's like, what if he rejects me? What if, and she's like, my heart cannot take that, which I think is fair, right? Like she's still pretty freaking embarrassed from their previous encounter, but she does work right. up some courage. She's like getting to it. And then Kingfisher turns to her and says, why haven't you said anything?
This is one of my favorite conversations.
What? She's, excuse me, sir, Lord of Kalish. What do you, he's like, why haven't you said anything? Which tells me that in his little Kingfisher brain, he's like, is she going to say something?
Right.
I wonder if she's thinking about it. I hope she had a good time. No, it's probably really bad. Well, we should talk about it. like he's probably thinking about all these things.
Right. But when she says that, she's like, oh, I was about to say something. I was just thinking. He literally is like, oh, not about that. I mean, about the other night. Which in my head, when I first read it, I was like, oh, he really wants her to like say something and like comfort him. And then he's like, no. About the other night when we were together. And I'm like,
yeah, no, oh, when that, it all went that, to shit.
That's a male thing to say. That's a male thing.
See, and I thought it would be more of like a male thing to like never talk about it again. Like, avoid it at all costs. Pretend it didn't happen.
I guess.
Like, I feel like it would be, like, a female thing to be like, we should talk about the other night.
Yeah.
Like, let's communicate, right? So, I thought it was surprising that he was like, why haven't you said anything about the other night? Right? So, and she was like, hey, like, we talked about, like, it was a one-time thing. Like, it's fine, right? And she also reminds him that he said that he could hate her and still sleep with her. And she doesn't want to continue to throw herself at things that hurt her. So she left it and she didn't see the point. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was sad that he reminded her.
Yeah, but I also...
What are your thoughts on this?
Well, this is also... The line that gets me is that... That part. But then she also says she didn't see the point as he wouldn't listen to her sit over tea and talk about how good they'd be together. So, like, she really likes him. She's like, I want to mm-hmm. be with him. But right. she also is, like, so sure that if she was like, we would be really good together. Why are we not together? That he would just, like, blow her off completely. That's mm-hmm. how she sees it. Which he probably would at this point.
Yeah.
Right. Like at this point, I feel like he'd be like, you don't know what you're talking about.
He does say, he like snorts and he's like, he says that he doesn't hate her.
Right.
And then he's like, but are things that you like, you don't understand. And in that moment is when they're interrupted.
Mm-hmm.
by an older woman. She's very excited to see Kingfisher. He's like, hi, Wendy. There's like big hugs going around, right? She's like, I made you biscuits. And you, she's this lady. She's like, I have made you biscuits every year for years and you never show up. This is the first moment that Kingfisher like truly laughs too. And mm-hmm. Sarris mentions that it's her favorite sound. And I, if I could change one thing about the audiobook, is that I would put in the laugh.
I can see that.
I need Kingfisher to laugh. I want to also hear the, I want to hear the moment. I want to hear the sound. Where That's is it? Fair. Why well, can't I not have it?
I mean, technically, this is just an audiobook. It's not the, what are they called?
I know it's not the dramatized like version, the, yeah. But can we type in some ha-has? Like, ha-ha-ha-ha. Type it in. It's fine. There's one, like, just show him laughing. I don't know. If I could change one thing, it would, that's what I would want. That's what I want.
That's fair. I think that's a fair.
Either way. I was like, I don't get to hear it, right? So she talks about how supplies are super expensive, mm-hmm. and they're pretty slim pickings. So even though they're slim pickings, she's still making these biscuits every year that nobody eats except Somehow. For Kingfisher, and he never shows up. and he's like, hey, like Wendy, I'll try to get the trade lines opened up for you. And she's like, oh, gross, I don't want those. Those traders are awful. And she's like, are you going to introduce me to this gal that you have here, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, I'm Sarris Fane. And he goes, oh, a Sylvaren girl. Okay. And then she says that she felt her come through the gates, right? So she felt like a buzz in the air, she says. Right. And then she also like takes her in and like sniffs her and is like, more than just a companion. And Kingfisher is like, she's just a friend and a temporary one. She'll be going home soon. We have in our show, in these notes, we have very different opinions. Do you want to go first? What are your thoughts on Miss Wendy?
Oh, no. It's not about Miss Wendy.
Oh.
The all caps is Kingfisher's response.
Okay, so for the record for you guys, we have like the quotes in here and it's Kingfisher's like, hey, she's just a friend, a temporary one. It's just the words bitch in capital letters. I thought you were talking about Wendy. So I wrote a bunch of things about why Wendy is amazing.
No.
I was like, Wendy was really great. Grandma vibes. Okay. I did nothing. Anyone would call sweet baby Kingfisher a bitch. So I did not in my any world think that that was to him.
That is such a rude thing to say. After he just was what? Like, why didn't we talk about it the other night? So obviously he cares. Then he's like, she's just a temporary friend. Sir.
Well, because she has said that she's going home every 2 minutes. Sir. She's like, I'm out of here. She is at this moment, she is a temporary friend.
No, that was a dig.
It was that a dig, was a but dig. It's not wrong.
That
it's
was true. An un. No, because in this circumstance, right, Wendy's like, oh, more than just a companion. Like, she knows they've been together, which takes me back to when she says, can Laura smell me at the bar? She hasn't showered. She hasn't stood. So obviously he could have smelt her.
So here was my question, right? Okay. So for Wendy, I 100% got grandma vibes, right? Little old fae lady who calls it like it is.
Yeah.
And I wonder, is she like a seer of some sort, right? She felt a buzz in the air when Sarris came through the portal. That's right. What she says. However, Sarris and Kingfisher came through the portal at the same time.
Right.
So did she feel Sarris or did she feel Kingfisher? And how did she know that she was a Sylvaren girl? There's lots of places that are not just Sylvaren, right?
Maybe.
Isn't there?
Part of and it also, makes me. So, okay. To the Sylvaren girl thing, right? When she first comes in, she's at the palace. Like with
Everlane? Like, yes. When she's healing?
Yes. Yeah, and okay. They have that big thing where she goes in and she talks, right? Like, mm-hmm. She's in front of all those people. In my mind, right, isn't he, like, the king? Like, isn't
he... Are you talking about Kingfisher or, like, Bellicon?
No, Bellicon. Isn't he, like, the king of all the fae?
In that, yeah, in that area, yes.
Okay, so I, in my head, just feel like she probably heard the gossip or, like, through the grapevine of that happening. And she knows that there's a Zilvaren girl.
And she's like, oh, you're the Zilvaren girl.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard about. Interesting. That's okay, that's a thought. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't think about that. I guess I didn't have an answer to it. I was just like, that's interesting, right? And so she's like smelling her. And my question is Wendy just a normal old lady, or is she like some sort of seer? And is she smelling like Ceres and Kingfisher on each other? Or does the mate bond give a smell?
That's a good question.
She like an old wise lady, is she like, that's more than a companion, my friend. Like, right. I can see this.
Maybe.
And then knows that Kingfisher is obviously, like, not wanting to talk about it, right? So she's like, okay, like, come along now. That's fine.
Right.
And also, maybe, like, this lady has probably known Kingfisher since he was a child.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For how comfortable they are together. And then she's like, I think she can sense a mate bond or smell the mate bond somehow, some way.
Maybe. Yeah.
That's my guess.
I can see that.
And so she has like food for them. She's feeding them, right? They're drinking. They're having a great time. Ceres is making jokes at Kingfisher, like, good warrior never dulls his senses with a drink. So they're having fun. And I think it's good. They both need to relax, right? Mm-hmm. So a pixie comes up and tries to steal food off of Ceres' plate. She steals it back and the pixie is screaming at her. Tiny little angry thing.
I love this part.
Ceres just wants to make the food smaller for her. So as she's like, here, like, let me rip up these little pieces of food. Kingfisher leans back in his chair with a tiny hint of a smile. And she's like, are you about to smile, Kingfisher of the Ajin Gates? And he says, well, what if I am? And she mentions she's only seen it a handful of times and no one will believe her. And he smiles big and ruefully and he says, they'll believe you, little Osha. They've seen me smile plenty of times. He mentions smiling is hard lately, but it's getting easier. Because they know previous Kingfisher. They, right. You know, they know Kingfisher before all of the things happened to him. So they have probably seen him run around for many years, smiling and laughing and giggling and learning and playing and doing all the things that he was doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good moment. That's a good line.
It makes me, like, think that, like, now he's, like, an emo boy, you know?
He's, like, not just a phase, Mom. He's going
through his emo phase.
Oh, my God. Yes.
That's what I see.
The hair across his forehead.
Yeah.
The eyeliner.
Yeah.
It's not just a phase, Mom. It's my life. That's hilarious. No, I'm here for it. That's so funny. Okay. So in this moment, she does mention that the silver in his eye is going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like moving around. It's doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And then we hear the famous words, Anorath Mor, Anorath Mor, Anorath Mor. She said the voices are so loud. And Wendy like snaps her out of it. She's like, hey, girl, you okay? Like, come back to us. Are you all right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's watching her at the whole camp, right? And she's like, are you okay? And Kingfisher's like, we had a lot to drink. Like, we're tired. The days are catching up with us. We need to go rest. Like, we're going to pack it up for the night. And Wendy's like, okay, yeah. Like, you got it, right? So they go to her. He takes her to a house and says, those words you said, why did you say them? And she says, she's like, I said them out loud because she didn't know. Right?
Right.
But I guess when they were there, she was like talking out loud, like, Anorath Mor, Anorath Mor. And he cuts her off and he's like, don't say that. Like, don't say that out loud. And she notices he looks scared. Right. She mentions she heard it before when he made her hold the Quicksilver in her hand, like way back when, multiple chapters ago. And she's like, she wants to know what it means. And he steps away from her and he's like, no, just don't say it. And he can't tell her. So this is the first time that Ceres sees Kingfisher actually show real fear. Like, he's legit terrified of these words.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in the book, we don't know what it means, right? But knowing that we've all finished said book, we understand now that he literally cannot tell us what it means because he is like in that bargain or that agreement with Malcolm in that area, right? So it is translated to release us. So when they eventually, multiple chapters down the road, go to like the area that all of the fae are in that had to be burned by Kingfisher that are in the stands, they're screaming Anorath Mor, which is basically release us. So mm-hmm. Kingfisher has heard these words shouted at him for over 100 years. Bro's got trauma.
It's just
crazy. Can you imagine?
So, okay. So my question is, then can she hear that because she can hear the Quicksilver?
See, like, I had wondered.
Could any alchemist hear that then? Or
I don't know.
Just her?
And that is it. Yeah. And then my question is, why is the Quicksilver saying it? Right? She doesn't hear it like she hears it from the feeders, like that are in the stands, right? Mm-hmm. When she goes, yeah, Malcolm, they're all screaming like Anorath Mor, and now she's hearing it right here with the Quicksilver in his eye. And then back when she's holding the Quicksilver in her hand, she hears it again. But then again, when she's holding her hand, is it the Quicksilver that's in her hand that's saying it, or is it the Quicksilver in Kingfisher's eye that's saying it? And why is the Quicksilver saying it?
He's touching her. Remember when he like holds her hand closed?
Right. But he wasn't touching her in this moment.
That's true. But she saw it going crazy in his eye, and she's starting to become more in tune with the Quicksilver.
She is. So do you think back then it wasn't the Quicksilver she was holding?
Now that you say that, I think not.
Maybe it's been the Quicksilver in his eye the whole time. And then why is it screaming, release us, if when she asks, like, hey, can you get out of there? Like, can you go? And it says, no. Like, we're not leaving. So my question is, why? Why is it saying this to her all the time? Well, we know what it means now.
It also confuses me, or like, I feel like, I mean, because this all ties into the bonus chapters, mm-hmm. right? Because it talks about the feeders that were in the stands were the one that he had to burn down, or like the city that had to burn down right before he disappeared.
Yeah, so it does tell that in later on in chapter 39, where it's titled Anorath Mor, is when we hear a lot of like the real meaning behind it. Like behind the words themselves.
But I'm trying to think. I don't know. Was there something with Quicksilver in that town that happened that they would be saying that? Or is that just part of the like mind control thing that Malcolm has?
Part of me thinks it's just part of the mind control thing that Malcolm has, like you had just mentioned, but part of me thinks it's also the Quicksilver knew that that's what has been shouted at him for so long.
Right.
Right. So is it saying it to, is the Quicksilver, because we know that it fucks with him, right? We know that it's mean to him. Is the Quicksilver saying it to just Kingfisher? And because Ceres is such a powerful alchemist, she can somehow come in tune with that. And so therefore she's hearing what it's saying to him.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
That would be my guess. That would be like the thing that I would think of, is it's like, it says it to him all the time. He's used to it, right? But he's not used to hearing it out loud, especially from another person. Right. So, which maybe is why he's like so upset about it. And it's like, hey, bro, Anorath Mor, Anorath Mor, Anorath Mor. Like, this is, we're going to torture you because we feel like it, because we're bored, right? I think that, again, my opinion is that the Quicksilver is very bored. It's very lonely. It's very selfish. Well, so I think like it taunts him all the time. It's right.
Which is a whole other thing.
So it's just like.
Yeah.
That would be my thought, is that she's so in tune with him, maybe not knowing so, maybe subconsciously, like, that it's projecting into her mind.
Right.
And she's speaking it out loud.
Yeah.
That would be my thought. Isn't that wild? So he brings her into the house through the forest. He takes her to a red door between the stores in the square, past a beautiful statue of a girl with long hair and water at her feet, right? She realizes the statue looks like Everlane, but has Kingfisher's cheekbones. And then she realizes this is Kingfisher's mother. This is Adina of the Seven Towers, or the Lady of Kalish. She must be obviously super important to the people here. So he brings her into the house. He says, like, hey, it's cold. She knew that was an excuse, but she went in anyways. They head upstairs and all the furniture is covered in sheets. Everything is like closed down, right? Kingfisher closes the curtains and she's like looking around the house and she realizes it looks like their home, right? And she goes, there's a painting on the wall and she goes to like pull a sheet off of it and he stops her. And he's like, no, 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 not today. He's not ready to see that kind of stuff. Right. He brought her to a very personal part of his life, a very personal part of his home. But I get why he would not want her to uncover like the paintings, like any paintings of his family.
Yeah.
I feel like that's fair. He leads her up to tip upstairs where there's two bedrooms, not the one bed trope. Two beds.
Rip. Rip.
You never saw this coming. This was a plot twist we never saw. There's always just one bed at the inn.
It's okay. No, but we there's have two the beds. Redemption next chapter.
We sure do have the redemption in the next chapter. But for this chapter, we have to sit down and have a little patience because there's two bedrooms and he tucks her into bed and she's like, hey, I forgot my bag. Like, I got to run back. And he like uses his shadows, conjures up this bag that she forgot and is like, good night, little Osha. Okay. If I could have magic powers, I want it to be that, because can you imagine? I forget so many things every day. If I could just be like, whoosh, there it is. Forgot my lunch. Whoosh, there it is. Forgot my water bottle. Whoosh, there it is. Forgot my phone. Oh my God. My life would be so much easier.
It's true.
I want these conjure powers. I don't need anything else. I just need shadow wielding conjure powers. Thank you.
That's it.
That's all I need in life. Request submitted. Dear Santa.
Can you conjure things that you don't own, though, too?
I mean, he doesn't own that bag, right? That's not – he's seen so the bag.
You would never have to buy anything ever again. You could just conjure sure. whatever you need.
Conjure it up.
That would be nice.
It's my dream. Might just be my dream for 30 seconds. I'm invested.
Oh my gosh.
And that is wrapping up chapter 25. Mm-hmm. We're doing pretty good. We're pretty far through this book. It's very exciting.
Yeah. Chapter 26 has a lot of information, but in mm-hmm. total, it's a pretty short chapter compared to
yeah, it's not very the long.
Last two. But it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like it pulls you in. It's got a lot in there.
Yeah, it does. It does have quite a bit in it. So when we get in there, it's so they're in the house for the night. They're sleeping, right? Ceres wakes up to Kingfisher like screaming, right? Mm-hmm. They're screaming in the house. She runs out of the bedroom and she can hear him screaming like, stop, no. And she's like running through and Onyx runs past her, not away from said screaming, toward said screaming. So he's running to Kingfisher. She follows Onyx to get to him because she's like, I don't know where to go, right? Mm-hmm. So she goes in there. He's sweating. Eyes are open. He's like crying. Seems locked in place. Like body is like locked, right? And he's screaming, go away. He's like, get out of here. Go. And she's refusing. She's like, I'm going to help you. Like, I'm going to find help. And he's like, no, no, no. It's going to end in an hour or two. Like, just go. And she's like, I'm not leaving. He's like, fine. Can you get me some water, right? And he's like, get me some water and go back to bed. So she grabs him some water and she's like, I'm not leaving. Like, I'm not going back to bed while you're like doing whatever episode seizure weird thing this is that's going on with you, right? And so Kingfisher's still laying there. He's struggling. Onyx is still with him, right? One more receipt to add to my like Onyx is more than just a fox. Again, he's running to Kingfisher instead of away from the screaming. He knew who was screaming. Any other animal would have been like, absolutely not. I'm out. Right? And then Onyx lays with him afterwards. I still don't know what the real story is behind that fox, but I am so convinced that it is someone reincarnated in his life.
What if it's his mom?
I think it's his mom. Yeah. I think it's his mom. That's my guess. I think it is his mom reincarnated, or somehow her soul is stuck in this little fox's body, right, or something. I don't know. Grandma that we never heard of. This fox is so important. I'm 100% convinced of it, because any other animal would have done something different, right? And Onyx is not just loyal to Cirrus. It also loves Kingfisher.
Right.
So I don't know. Anyways, he can't move his body, and she decides to stay with him and help him, even though he's like insisting she needs to leave, right? So she comes behind him. She's like propping his head up. She's helping him drink the glass of water, and he's getting better, right? And he again is like, just go. And she's like, no, I'm not leaving, right? And so she can see the silver pulsing in his eye. So again, we note what the silver is doing in this moment. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm going to force you to leave. I'm going to force you to go. And she's like, okay, bro, if you use that oath against me one more time, like, I'm going to be really upset. So it was funny in this moment, because I love that she took the moment when he was in a, like, a delirious, struggling state and is like, you're never going to use that fucking oath against me again. Got it? Like, do you understand me? And he's like, yeah, I got it. Honestly, he should. I think he was done using that oath a long time ago, right? He did mention that he only is going to use that oath when she was in danger.
Right.
So I think he was just like, I'm going to make you leave if you don't go. And she's like, good try. Yeah. Good luck. Right. So he finally accepted. She stays. It continues on for like 4 hours. So way longer than he mentioned it would be. He was like delirious for a part of it. He's like being thrown around when the waves would happen. And the entire time she can hear Anna Rathmore chanting in her head. So my question is, our guess is, again, from earlier conversation, that we think it's the Quicksilver like fucking with him, right? Does it do this to him every night? And again, is this a choice for the Quicksilver? Or can they not help it either? Why does it not happen during the day? Is it like a dream? Like, does Kingfisher lay down to go to sleep and he dreams of his trauma, and therefore the Quicksilver is now awoken and agitated, like when he enters a REM state and has a dream about it? And then it's like, Anna Rathmore. Because it said it's pulsed, like the Quicksilver was pulsing in his eye, and it covered almost his entire iris and only showed a little bit of green.
Right.
And she also mentions that she's like, this relic isn't even working. Like, what is the point of it? Right. And I also question, like, is there a time of day that the Quicksilver is stronger than other parts of the day? Like, why at night when he's sleeping? And again, does this happen every night? Like, that's probably why he has to go see Taylena, right? Like, we know he's going there to heal, not just his external injuries, but like internal things as well.
Right.
So those are my questions. Well,
maybe when he's sleeping, because he's not actively fighting it. That's like the one time when he's relaxing or his brain isn't thinking about it, maybe. Because like, right. I feel like during the day, he's probably fighting that thing in his head 24/7.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so at night when he is vulnerable, it just comes through and then he's screwed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very possible.
I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't think it would happen every night though, because do they sleep in the same room after they're together? They don't.
Mm-mm.
But I feel like they do at they do at some
from
point.
Here on, they have, yes. I'm pretty sure.
And,
but not before.
But this is the only time it happens. So maybe it just builds up.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Or maybe because of the episode at the dinner, like when they were drinking, right, and things like that, maybe because of that episode, it like triggered it.
Maybe. Or him being in his childhood home.
Maybe he was finally getting a good night of sleep for once.
Yeah.
And it was like, bet. It's like a newborn baby sleeping. Not anymore. Just kidding. Be awake. Oh my God. And so he's finally starting to feel a little bit better. Saris is giving him basically like a massage on his muscles, like in his shoulders, trying to just calm him down, right? And she mentions that his tattoos start to move again, and they slowly climb onto her body in the shapes of like runes. This, the first time she got a tattoo, they were like doing it, right? So mm-hmm. she got a bird on her chest. It was the very first one. This time they're not doing anything crazy. Like she's just consoling him and comforting him. And so was it the deep connection between the two that made the mate bond more solid? Were the tattoos waiting to go on there beforehand? It just wanted to wait till like he touched her. Like why in this moment?
Well, we find out later on, like, isn't it Taylena that explains to her?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I would assume it's because right now they're having a connection, like mm-hmm. a deep connection, like something important is happening between them. And that's why the tattoos are moving on to her.
And his guard is down.
Right.
Yeah, that was my thought as well.
Yeah. That's what I think. It's always like when something big is happening emotionally mm-hmm. between them.
Yeah.
So.
That's true. They do get into some serious conversation too, because Kingfisher's like, I want to hear more about your life. Like, I want to hear what's going on. And I don't want, like, she's like, I don't have any good memories. And he's like, that's cool. Like, I want real stuff, right? So she talks about her father. He died when she was 2. Hayden wasn't born yet. He died in a sand dune where he was working. Her mom, Iris, had to end up, like, selling her body to get food and water and money. And she worked at the House of Kala. Mm-hmm. During this, like, Madras, a lot of Madras men were local customers of hers. So she saw them all the time. And then this is where Elroy kind of came into her life. She did mention that Elroy loves her mm-hmm. or like loved her mom, right? But never tried to make a move. And so they would work together to create, like build the weapons. Like Elroy would build the weapons. And then Iris would take them and pass them on and sell them, things like that. She gave some to the ladies at the House of Kala to help protect themselves, like very small daggers. Mm-hmm. She also mentions that there's underground supply chains, things like that, that they were a part of. So essentially they were like kind of rebels, right? They were in it.
They trained Saris to do that as yes. well, or to become a runner for them as she gets older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And like men would drop things off in the middle of the night, and like rebels would be up in their attic for like a month or so. So she was a part of it as well, right? Hayden was too young, so he wasn't a part of any of that kind of stuff. And so with her mom, she went to work one day and she forgot her ration of water. So Saris chased after her with the water so that way she wasn't thirsty for the day. And that's where she found her mom, like in the square. And the guards, because her mom had stopped servicing them because she didn't want to do that kind of stuff anymore, they got upset. Well, and they found 2 small knives on her.
It was servicing at her house.
Yeah, she was doing it like after yes. hours, essentially.
And they showed up and she was like, I'm not doing it at the house anymore. I'll meet you at Kala. And they were mad mm-hmm. about it. They're like,
right, their egos.
Excuse me? So yeah. Which
yeah. Real shitty.
Uh-huh.
And so they find 2 small knives on her, which the punishment for having a weapon on you in that area is death. And so like there's no trial, no nothing, right? So they kill her. And they slit her throat and they left her face down in the sand and they all like peed on her body. Like it was really graphic. So Saris got Elroy to help move her body. And when they return, the neighbors are like spitting on her and a man tries to steal her clothes and he makes like really vulgar. He like says a bunch of really awful things, which that part she does not tell Kingfisher. And I think that was a good choice because –
Oh, go ahead. Mm-hmm. You go first.
No, you. So I was going to, I think we probably will say the same thing. Probably. I think it was a good choice not to tell him that. That's a lot for her to say, but also like it's a really sad story as is. And I don't think she wanted to upset him too much.
Even with like some of the small things that she has said with like telling the story, like in one of them, when she says that her mother introduced her to men, he flinches.
Right, because he assumes.
Yes, but she's like, no, mm-hmm. like, not the men that my yeah. mom was working for, like, the underground ring that taught me how to, like, survive, like, and
yeah.
and make money. So, yeah, I feel like that was a safe option for her. That
yeah, I think she knew, like, that like, would just upset him more.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, I agree as well, yeah. And so she also kind of gives us – we get a little bit more of a backstory on Hayden as well. So Hayden began growing up, and everyone in the third told him his mother was selling herself, right? So Hayden grew up only knowing really bad stories about his mom, right, except for the ones that he knew from Saris and Elroy.
Right.
They didn't ever live with Elroy. Like, Elroy could have raised them, but they didn't want any connection to him as far as the weapons, because then it would have gotten him in trouble. And so during this, like, really vulnerable moment, Kingfisher rolls over and asks her to come lay with him. He wraps his arms around her, rests his hands on her stomach, and his heartbeat was steady in this moment. And he says, "My mother was killed too. We have that in common, little Osha." And that is the end of the chapter.
I do want to note, though, just something that, like, was big to me with that story. I think we skipped over it right at the end. But after they get rid of her mom's body, when they come back, their home, like, that she grew up in and was living mm-hmm. in, was already boarded up. Like, the day after they go and burn her mom's body, they come back.
Yeah, for the because the quarantine started.
Yeah,
hers was Madra, the first one.
Yeah, Madra quarantines their house first. So, like you said, they never really stayed with Elroy, but she just, like, they just found places to stay, like, mm-hmm. on their own after that yep. the whole time. Which it seems like that is similar for Kingfisher too, right? Like, his mom died mm-hmm. after that, and Bellicon didn't want him.
Right, so, like, he was just, like, on his own. Like,
he has anything. Yeah, he just also right. felt the same.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah. I know, it's so sad. That's so sad. But I think it was a good way for them to, like, connect, and I'm glad that I'm glad that she's opening up to him.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I thought that was a good moment. And that's where we wrap it up at the end of chapter 6. We're leaving on a super sad note.
Yeah. I love these chapters.
It's necessary, though. What a good sesh. What a good couple of chapters.
Yeah. There are some of my favorite.
Things are going to start sure. amping up from here on out. So things are about to start getting crazy.
Yeah.
I hope you guys are ready.
For sure.
Can't get enough of the Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.